The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. Live in the Israel Update with Anthony Rice, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Rice, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Okay, Tov Howard, how are you doing today?
Yes, excellent. Thank you.
Welcome back, Zanati.
They're not treating me very nicely in studio, but, that's just how it is. And in protest, I'm not coming back for another 2.5 weeks. That's how it's just going to be. All right.
Yeah, of course, because this is all about how they're treating you, Howard, which is actually really no different from the day before yesterday, right?
Or how I treat anybody else in studio. But that's an aside. Anthony, a terrorist involved in the Ofra attack earlier this week, was shot by IDF soldiers in a confrontation last night. A second person also connected to the attack was apprehended. What do we know about this incident?
Well, even before we talk about this incident, of course, we had to hear the horrendous news last night of the death of a baby that was born prematurely to the mother who was wounded in that attack. And there were some very emotional scenes as the 4-day-old baby was buried on the Mount of Olives. And his paternal grandfather, who is a rabbi, actually named him at the funeral, which is something that, I'd never come across before. And please God, we should never have to come across something like this.
Yeah, what was interesting as well to me is I was always under the impression that from a Jewish perspective, you didn't have a formal funeral if a child hadn't survived, I think it's 30 days of life. You don't sit, I thought we didn't sit Shiva. In other words, you don't go through the normal mourning process. Obviously, that was all put aside in this case.
Well, I don't know if the normal, mourning process will be followed because there are allowances for shorter mourning periods. I don't know if there will be a shiva as we know it, and certainly in terms of the full period of saying Kaddish and mourning, have the 11-month period. I'm not sure that will necessarily apply in this case. But what we do know is that the baby was actually named Amiyad Yisrael. He was buried on the Mount of Olives. Unfortunately, his parents weren't at his funeral because they're still recovering in hospital from their injuries. And the good news is that Shira is doing better and is stronger. And hopefully, she will live a long and happy life and hopefully go on to have children.
You sound like you've got a bit of an assistant in the background.
I've got a lot of assistants going on here. I'm trying to get rid of my assistants.
Don't worry.
Trying to get me on holiday as well.
I can tell you that not one of our listeners will mind that type of assistance in the background. So please don't stress, and you don't need to get them to keep quiet.
I need it because I don't want them to send me on holiday.
Right, exactly. But obviously back to that story. It's just a horrific one, and the fact that that they couldn't attend the funeral. Obviously, the husband's doing better. Is that right?
Well, they're both doing better. I mean, Shira's doing better as well. I mean, she was 30 weeks pregnant, and one would have thought that a baby born prematurely may well be viable at that stage. But it's very difficult to know exactly what injuries were suffered both by the mother and the baby during the period of that, during the time of that shooting. We know that Shira was shot in the lower abdomen area, which obviously is not what you want to have happen when you're 7 months pregnant. Having said that, this baby will clearly be some sort of a symbol, not only for the Ofra settlement, but indeed for all of us, as a symbol for just to keep remembering what can happen, even though, we in the most part live here and we get to enjoy a full Jewish life and we have, a lot of things that we have to be grateful for being able to live in our country. But yet, we've always got in the background these terrible incidents that take place. And the fact that we always know that there are people around there who are trying to do us damage, who are trying to destroy us, who are trying to eradicate us from this land. And despite their loss and despite the mourning that they're going through, that family is absolutely resolved to be here and to fight whatever needs to be fought in order to maintain our rights to be here. And that was clear from the eulogies that were delivered by the baby, who obviously we didn't even really know his personality or anything like that, but there were eulogies delivered by the grandparents. And as I say, hopefully Shiran, Amichai, Ishran will go on to enjoy long and healthy lives and will be able to have more children and we really just pray for them at this time when they really are going through a lot of grief, and of course while trying to recover themselves from the injuries that they've made, that they sustained during that attack. But we were talking as well about this incident where the terrorists were apprehended, or at least some of the terrorists were apprehended. And what happened, there was an incident where apparently a building was surrounded near the Mukatta in Ramallah. So there was a unit of IDF soldiers who actually went into Ramallah and actually surrounded this building where they thought that the terrorists involved in the incident were in the building. It turns out afterwards that they went, the soldiers followed a taxi where these two guys were traveling in. And then when they tried to apprehend them, one of the terrorists started to shoot at them and started to resist arrest. He was shot. The second one was arrested shortly after that. In the process of that shooting, the one terrorist was actually killed. It turns out that these two terrorists are both from the very, very large and very famous Barghouti family.
I wondered if there was a connection of when I saw the surname.
There is absolutely a connection. A lot of them are connected anyway. And ironically, they are the sons of Omar Barghouti, not the same Omar Barghouti who leads the BDS movement, is very, very famous for his leadership of BDS, but rather another Omar Barghouti who's also a West Bank Hamas leader. I believe also related to Barghouti, who is sitting in Israeli prison and regarded as one of the leaders of Fatah as well. So, you know, there is certainly a link between all these Barghoutis, and it's very interesting that on this occasion that's who it is. But as I said yesterday, there is no doubt that the IDF will certainly go after the people carrying out this attack. They'll be very determined in doing so, and nothing will stop them until all of those who are involved in this attack are brought to justice. It's interesting that we have the Barghoutis involved and their links with Hamas. And so the question now remains whether this was an attack that was instigated by Hamas, that was actually ordered by Hamas, that might have been funded by Hamas. So this is all part of what the IDF will be going through. Fortunately, they have one of those individuals in custody now. So I'm sure that they will be going through together with the Shabak, trying to get the entire story of how it came about that those people were shot at while going about their daily business celebrating Hanukkah.
I see that Hamas did take responsibility. They did earlier this morning issue a statement once the perpetrator had been identified. I see that they've done that, which I find completely bizarre because, you know, here in South Africa, we've had the situation that very, very recently that Hamas is visiting South Africa. They're signing memorandums of understanding as though they're a legitimate group. And here they are proudly taking the blame or responsibility or proudly lauding the fact that Hamas was behind a shooting of a pregnant, innocent pregnant woman in the belly and for the loss of her child. And they're okay with that. In fact, not that they're okay with it, they're proud of it. I just don't understand how the world reconciles this.
Well, the truth of the matter is that, you know, Hamas didn't need to have this particular incident for it to be clear that they're a terror organization.
No, sure.
You know, I mean, this is just kind of the most recent of a number of incidents where, you know, there can be absolutely no doubt in anybody's mind, anybody at least who cares to understand what the facts are, but there can be no doubt in their minds that Hamas is a terror organization, that they behave as such. So the fact that they happen to turn up in South Africa, you know, despite this incident is, you know, I think very, very strange indeed, and really speaks volumes about those people who are prepared to sign agreements with an organization like that. Mm. Having said that, when they take responsibility for actions, for terror attacks and things like that, we don't always necessarily buy into it at face value. They like to take responsibility for things we've seen in the past. Numerous groups clamor to take responsibility in order to try and put themselves on the map as soon as something happens. It's very convenient, at least in order to satisfy, in order to give some sort of a standing to their organization within the general Palestinian public, that they take responsibility for it and people give them credit if you need, if that's the right word for actions of this nature. So it's quite expected that they would take responsibility for it. The surprise was that they didn't perhaps take responsibility for it a little bit earlier. Having said that, we are still not entirely convinced that they were responsible for it, at least until such time as we've managed to follow up and, you know, put join all the dots together and find out exactly what the chain of command was and how the instructions were issued, how the weapons were bought, where the money came from, where the ideas came from. All of that, I'm sure our security services will be doing over the next few days.
All right, and Haifa's new deputy mayor has been forced to resign, and that's over his support for terror organizations.
So this is a very, very odd and unfortunate situation because, as you know, we quite recently had local government elections. And in Haifa, there's a very, very large community of Arabs, all of whom have the right to vote, and indeed they do vote. And as a result of their votes, first of all, the new elected mayor is Einat Kalish Rotem. She was appointed mayor after the election. And as part of the agreement that was reached within the Haifa municipality and according to the number of seats that were allocated to each of the various parties arising from the vote, a man by the name of Raja Zaatri was appointed deputy mayor. And of course, he represents an Arab party. That's absolutely no secret. And also no surprise and no issue. I mean, that is something that we would absolutely expect in towns and cities where there's a large Arab representation, that they would also have their fair share of representation. The problem is that no sooner had he been appointed as deputy mayor, he then went on to claim that Hezbollah and Hamas were legitimate organizations. Did not in any way withdraw from that particular position. So he was carrying a Palestinian flag during a demonstration in Haifa and just generally displaying some sort of an affiliation with these terror organizations, which are openly have the objective of destroying Israel. They are absolute enemies of Israel. And if a man is going to be representing a city council, even if he's not in national politics, and of course we have seen this phenomenon in national politics as well, but if he's going to be representing a city council and he's going to be appointed as the deputy mayor of a city like Haifa, then the last thing that you would expect is that he's going to go around supporting organizations that clearly call for the destruction of Israel and, you know, ironically, would harm him. They wouldn't necessarily distinguish between other citizens of Haifa and Arab citizens of Haifa. They would attack them all in the same way. Now, then what happened was that Einat Kalish Rotem was brought under a lot of pressure to dismiss him as deputy mayor, from people who suggested that he wasn't an appropriate candidate to be the deputy mayor of Haifa. And in fact, even Prime Minister Netanyahu intervened. Kalish Rotem was actually on holiday away out of Israel last week, and apparently the Prime Minister's office called her while she was on her holiday to say to her that it would not be appropriate to allow Zaatri to continue to act as deputy mayor of Haifa. And finally, the pressure was brought to bear on him that he actually resigned yesterday. So he will not be the deputy mayor. And as I understand it, another member of his party, another Arab member of the city council, will fill that position instead. But clearly we're going to keep an eye on that because, you know, it's very, very sensitive, the whole geopolitical balance, the whole social balance in the city of Haifa. And the last thing that we want is somebody like him to upset the apple cart in that city.
Absolutely. Before I let you go, tell us about the medical cannabis export bill.
Well, I've been wanting to talk about medical cannabis for quite some time because not only has medical cannabis now been legalized in Israel and seems to be in quite a broad use across Israel in different forms, whether it be ointments or tablets or even people inhaling it in various different forms. It seems as if the medical cannabis has now taken on its own life in terms of being quite a large product for export in Israel, that the number of farms and farmers that have been set up, something like 280 farmers and about 100 companies and business people, have already received initial approval from the government to set up farms for the purposes of growing medical cannabis for export. So this is now Israel, you know, taking the whole high-tech thing to another level, where, you know, we set up high-tech to improve our lives and then exported high-tech to the world to really change the way that the world operates. You can sort of see a parallel here with the medical cannabis industry, although, you know, not quite in the same way. But a lot of people are now jumping on the bandwagon of cannabis being legalized in various countries for medical use and seeing an opportunity to get involved in that. And there are many, many people now who absolutely do that. And so the Knesset decided that they needed to make sure that there was proper supervision around this whole area of medical cannabis, particularly medical cannabis for export. And so a first bill was presented to the Knesset a week or so ago, where it was passed unanimously at its first reading. And apparently the law will allow police to have powers and budget in order to supervise companies that are involved in producing cannabis for medical use, not only in Israel, but indeed now particularly for the export market. So I think that this is a whole new world and an interesting one that we're going to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. And Anthony Reich, this is where we love and leave you. You'll be back on Monday with Kathy Kayla, but I'll be chatting to you in January when I'm back from a little bit of a holiday.
Well, I hope you have a great time. Enjoy your break. Enjoy your holiday. And that goes to everybody out there who's also about to head off on their holidays. I will be here as usual. Unfortunately, no holidays for us right here. For us right now, we've had our holidays.
Not that time of year, absolutely.
So you enjoy yours, have a good time, and Shabbat Shalom. And I look forward to talking to you when you're back.
Absolutely right. That's Anthony Reich with the Israel Report.